John Keats is one of the most written about and studied poets from the Romantic era. Is there anything left to say about the young man who died at just 25 after writing some of the most gorgeous verse in British literature? Professor of English at the University of St Andrews, Nicholas Rowe, has published what he believes to be the definitive biography of Keats. Nicholas has been in New Zealand for the Victoria University's Conference on Romantic Voyages, Voyaging Romantics. As I was sitting down to read this, I was thinking, John Keats, Nicholas Rowe, are you brave? Are you crazy? Because he's been so written about and so analysed. What made you take on his biography?
Although there have been very many biographies of Keats over the years, none of them have really investigated his very earliest years, that is, his childhood years before he went to Enfield School in 1803.
In terms of all the research you've done, Nicholas, do you think you come up with a different John Keats to the one of the imagination or the one that's kind of popularly thought to have been?
The poet of beauty and truth. The kind of thing you get in the Ode on the Grecian Urn. Yes, I do. He's far more responsive, for example, to aspects of landscape, the cityscape, far closer perhaps to the kind of voice you might associate with a modernist writer like T.S. Eliot, writing about broken bottles, dusty lanes, the effects of heat on horsemen, coachmen, that kind of thing. Very much more attuned to the fabric of everyday life. And to take one example, a striking one, I think, from his earliest years. As a boy, he was brought up opposite the enormous madhouse Bedlam, which ran along the south side of Moorfields and was directly opposite his childhood home at the Swan and Hoop livery stable. Outside Bedlam, on the gateposts, were two statues of melancholy madness, which obviously has an immediate echo in the Ode on Melancholy, but also a more terrifying figure, raving madness. And it seemed to me, having read a 19th century history of London that was describing these statues, I suddenly found that this commentator seemed to be echoing Hyperion. And sure enough, and as I argue in the book, the figures of the fallen Titans in Hyperion, Keats's fragmentary epic in book two of that poem, seem to me to be based on the terrifying statues outside the madhouse that he'd seen perhaps as young as 5 years old.
Segment 1.
John Keats is one of the most written about and studied poets from the Romantic era. Is there anything left to say about the young man who died at just 25 after writing some of the most gorgeous verse in British literature? Professor of English at the University of St Andrews, Nicholas Rowe, has published what he believes to be the definitive biography of Keats. Nicholas has been in New Zealand for the Victoria University's Conference on Romantic Voyages, Voyaging Romantics. As I was sitting down to read this, I was thinking, John Keats, Nicholas Rowe, are you brave? Are you crazy? Because he's been so written about and so analysed. What made you take on his biography?
Segment 2.
Although there have been very many biographies of Keats over the years, none of them have really investigated his very earliest years, that is, his childhood years before he went to Enfield School in 1803.
In terms of all the research you've done, Nicholas, do you think you come up with a different John Keats to the one of the imagination or the one that's kind of popularly thought to have been?
The poet of beauty and truth, the kind of thing you get in the Ode on the Grecian Urn. Yes, I do.
Segment 3.
He's far more responsive, for example, to aspects of landscape, the cityscape, far closer perhaps to the kind of voice you might associate with a modernist writer like T.S. Eliot, writing about broken bottles, dusty lanes, the effects of heat on horsemen, coachmen, that kind of thing. Very much more attuned to the fabric of everyday life. And to take one example, a striking one, I think, from his earliest years, as a boy he was brought up opposite the enormous madhouse Bedlam, which ran along the south side of Moorfields and was directly opposite his childhood home at the Swan and Hoop livery stable. Outside Bedlam, on the gateposts, were two statues of melancholy madness, which obviously has an immediate echo in the Ode on Melancholy, but also a more terrifying figure, Raving Madness.
Segment 4.
And it seemed to me, having read a 19th century history of London that was describing these statues, I suddenly found that this commentator seemed to be echoing Hyperion. And sure enough, and as I argue in the book, the figures of the fallen Titans in Hyperion, Keats's fragmentary epic in book two of that poem, seemed to me to be based on the terrifying statues outside the madhouse that he'd seen perhaps as young as 5 years old.